Dancy Lagarde fans, you will be thrilled to know a book is coming out if you fund it. Via Unbound, we are publishing The Dancy Lagarde Reader by Alice Fraser and Dancy Lagarde, a glorious insight into the world of Dancy Lagarde, self-published romance maven and online bestseller. If you would like to find out how to support it, go to thebuglepodcast.com. If we get enough support, we will publish the book. That's a real thing that's going to happen. Thebuglepodcast.com to support The Dancy Lagarde Reader.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello, posters, and welcome to The Last Post, the post-final word in this, the most post-final of worlds. Today's episode is for the month of April of the year 2021. We come live to you from this alternate dimension because our sponsors are dropping off, mainly due to the obliteration of Earth by the Boris Johnson / Piers Morgan love dragon baby's hunger for attention, controversy, and innocent flesh. So we pierce the veil of space-time to bring you the lush luxury space station satirical news commentary you deserve, and according to my agent, will pay for. And our guests today, from New Camelot, one of the final two contestants / survivors in the royal family's recent bloodbath, welcome back to the show, John Luke Roberts.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a delight to have you too. It's nice to talk to anyone down there on Earth. I'm always thrilled when we get in contact with one of our previous guests to know that they're still at least vaguely intact. And from the lonely splendour of his Matryoshka house, which is all of his celebrity mansions stacked inside each other, Andrew Zaltzman.
Hello, Alice.
Hello.
Is that you?
Yes.
You're the first.
Yes, it is me.
You're the first person I've spoken to since the 31st of December.
You seem to be wearing new branded merch. Is that?
Well, you have to keep up standards, don't you? I mean, it's been a difficult time for everyone. What is it? What's the like 90-95% of the population of the world wiped out? I mean, that doesn't
gone.
Mean well. It doesn't mean that much to the people who've remained, but for someone like me, that's 95% of my audience that have just gone over. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to keep hope. If you give away the hope that you can once again one day sell branded gear, you might as well give up everything. So I'm clinging to that.
Just to be clear, is what you're wearing a branded Zaltzman mining helmet?
It's a woolly anti-radiation and asteroid hat. It's not, and right, you can see it's not a hard and it has this because, you know, people look to celebrities like me to provide light in the darkness, and with this hat I can literally provide light. They're available for if anyone still has any currency that works. In old money, £1,000 a head.
You've changed, Andrew Zaltzman. You know, when we last spoke, you would have had a tech press that button for you, but now you're your own tech, down to earth.
Well, yes, yeah. Well, I mean, I can't take the risk of really contacting any other human beings. I need to maintain my own safety as a celebrity above all else. I mean, and it is difficult being a celebrity when you are locked on your own in a series of mansions.
Coming up today, Mother Russia starts bottle feeding her ungrateful children. New Zealand and New Zealand open their borders to billionaires for movie making. And speaking of billionaires, we take a look at what's baking on the Mars colony for Elon Musk. Get it? Bacon? Because it's the microchipped pigs who have some things to say to the people of Earth. Also, I would like to apologise to all the people I offended by talking about the last people surviving on Earth as not being a very good market for me. It turns out everyone's a minority now, literally. But before we get into the meat of this episode, some headlines of stories we won't have time for. In the news this month, the Berlusconi against Dorothy the Dinosaur cult war in Italy is heating up, with the traditional running of the bulls to be replaced by a bunga bunga pasta collage party, a battle of debauchery versus arts and crafts, where nobody knows the possible outcome, but we can guarantee it'll be sticky. John Luke Roberts, do you have any bets to make on who's going to win this latest battle?
I think it'll be the pasta side. You've got to win with the pasta. They're very sharp before they've been cooked, so you know you're in a hiding to nothing if you're opposite a sharpened fettuccine.
Testify.
Is that a pasta? Is that a pasta? A fettuccine. Yes. I reached for a pasta and I thought fettuccine. But it could have been a composer. I didn't know till I said it. So thank you
It is indeed.
But it actually came from the fetish scene, didn't it? Fettuccine. It was a pasta designed specifically for use in S&M situations.
Yeah, the raunchiest of pasta.
Yes, it's sort of like a barometer of sexiness, which is to say it starts off hard, but if you can make it al dente, you know you're sexy enough. Meanwhile, New Zealand is still claiming to have not noticed anything has changed in the last few months and is hoping to put out more high fantasy classic films. Any expectations for cinematic releases based on books in the near future? And how will they make their money back? Andrew Zaltzman, do you have any sense of what movies are coming out and whether you'll be cast in any of them?
It's not really a direction I'm looking to take my career in at the moment, Alice, being as I am locked in alone in a series of concentric mansions. But I don't know. I mean, I think people will just yearn for anything from the old days, and any book that's left. I think the Oxford English Dictionary, I think, would make a terrific film. You know, maybe it may just make a film of Mr. Tickle by the great Roger Hargreaves. I believe it's a story that needs to be told to a wider audience. I mean, I know it's a little 1970s in the way it portrays male characters, but I think it's definitely something that the film industry needs to dictionary first, maybe a thesaurus as a follow up, and then it could even do an English to French dictionary, and very much vice versa. But dictionaries and Mr. Men books, I see that as in these changed circumstances, films that have a realistic chance of getting made.
And just to clarify, are you currently looking at a bookshelf in which there are only dictionaries and Mr. Men books?
Alice, you visited my house in the old days. You know exactly that's what is on my bookshelves. And I only have a dictionary so I can understand the Mr. Men books.
John Luke Roberts, any classic fantasy you're looking forward to seeing New Zealand make with New Zealand in the coming months?
The trouble is that I'm living a classic fantasy at the moment because I'm in New Camelot, which is near Heston Services, just outside the M25, and I'm cohabiting with King Arthur. So if really the escapism I want is a good gritty kitchen sink drama. It's fantasy up to my eyeballs right now here in New Camelot. So I'd like to say New Zealand, thanks, but no thanks.
Well, there's some concern in the surviving film critic industry that there will be shoehorned into classic fantasies characters that are, let's say, octopus people, because they're doing all of the funding now for New Zealand, obviously. So they're going to be casting characters in order to provide sort of tentacle propaganda in these sort of times. Do you think it will ruin the classic fantasy to have tentacle characters in there?
My feeling actually is if you're doing an adaptation of Mr. Tickle, that's perfect for an octopus person. You've basically getting closer to Mr. Tickle than we could do pre-octopus people. So I think that's great. That's great casting. And if you want to adapt Mr. Tickle's book, Roger Hargreaves, you can dress up an octopus person in a hat to do that.
Well, the pigs on Mars are refusing to let Elon Musk's escape ship land on the surface of the red planet. He's currently stuck in orbit saying things on Twitter. What's your favourite tweet of his, Andrew?
Well, my favourite tweet of Elon. Well, I mean, he's been unloading on the pigs in Twitter form. It's amazing how much anti-pig vitriol one man, if we may indeed call Elon Musk a man or even a human, how much vitriol you can cram into those 280 characters. Now, Musk's difficulties with the pig community, of course, go back a long time. He has not had cordial relations with pigs, particularly after launching his bacon cordial drink for children. That really brought things to a new low. The Truffle Hunter Auto Pig, that was one of his great developments of last year, that really put a lot of pigs out of work when you automate truffle hunting with a robot that is like a pig, but even better than a pig and kosher, then of course the pigs are not going to react particularly kindly when he turns up on Mars and wants to the e-sausage as well, the Elon Musk e-sausage that was like a sausage but without the pig. And you know, where do the pigs go from there if they cannot be a constituent part of the great sausage? And he's also, ironically, one of the reasons why the pigs are so angry with Musk is because he has used pig technology on several of his rockets, the tail in particular, the corkscrew effect that helps control the aerodynamics of a rocket on re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere is based on the corkscrew tail of the classic pig. And some say, evolutionary biologists claim this is actually evidence that the pigs did come from outer space and were specifically bred in a distant galaxy to be able to enter the atmosphere of planets such as Earth. And in fact, the piggy snout we know now is a result of them crash landing on Earth. They actually used to have quite long, pointy pig snouts, but I guess we don't exactly know the full science on that. But as far as I'm concerned, they're welcome to Mars. The place is a shithole.
Well, it's unfortunate. Some people are saying that Elon Musk has owned himself, as he owns indeed everything else, by getting rid of his army en route. Of course, he left Earth with a massive back catalogue of Elon Musk fanboys that he then used as fuel on the route to Mars. So now he's left with only a few of those, presumably for food, until he can find his way down to the Red Planet and establish a base there. Of course, the pigs do not want to re-enter the zone of Elon Musk lest they be re-controlled by his Neuralink network. They've formed a sort of a hive mind there and are quite happy operating independent of Elon Musk's control circuit.
What a way to go if you are an Elon Musk fanboy. Surely that's the way you would want to die, isn't it? To be used as fuel, to become as one with, if you will, Muskness by being used as fuel in a Musk rocket, surely.
Look, it certainly was in the fine print of their contracts. So whether they read it and assented, or whether they failed to read it and then deserved it, either way, we can all be happy that they are happy with their eventual outcome. John Luke Roberts, what's your favourite tweet of Elon Musk from recent days?
Oh, it's pigs, !, twats, !, hashtag Tesla. I thought he just summed it up very, very quickly, very, very well. And I know that it's fashionable to Musk bash, but I'd like to come to Elon's defence. I think he's done great things. I think that without the invention of the e-sausages, we'd never have had that, we'd never have had that wonderful video of those military industrial dog robots stealing strings of the e-sausages and running out of the Tesla factory while Elon Musk chased them going, "Give me back my sausages! Give me back my sausages!" And, I feel that it harks back to a humbler time. And I'd like to thank Musk for that. So I'd like to say, Musk, !, thanks, !, hashtag kindness.
I mean, that is a beautiful sentiment. Of course, as with all Elon Musk things, there's a one hand and the other hand, because of course, without the e-sausages, you wouldn't have had those stirring scenes, but also without the e-sausages, you wouldn't have had the Yum2K panic, where everybody worried that the sausages would lose track of time.
Look, if you're going to invent an e-sausage, Alice, where's the e-ketchup? I mean, this is Musk's kind of the arrogance of the man, let alone an e-mustard. It's just shows, he flits from one project to the next. It's like a soluble submarine all over again.
Let the free market do its work.
Sorry. You're quite right. That was foolish of me.
That's all the time we have for the headlines we don't have time for, because now it's time for your ads. Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. Sometimes you're browsing the internet or trying to escape from a totalitarian regime and you come across a geo-block or border. You need Netscape. Netscape, bringing you the most illegal crossing between VPN and actual national lines since Mission Impossible 10, Troll Wars. Netscape lets you stream high-speed movies, games, and blueprints while evading patrols. Go where you want, when you want, and watch Game of Thrones while you're doing it. Netscape. Some people call us grossly exploitative of vulnerable people, to which we say, it's not gross, it's net. Hot girl walking down the street, what's her secret? Probably genetics, but if it isn't, probably expensive. But if it isn't that, it's probably this one cheap trick your doctor wants to hide from you because it's lethal in 70% of attempts and technically constitutes a deal with the devil. But if it isn't, it's probably clean living and staying hydrated. Half a glass of water. The most practical step towards a beautiful life that isn't literally selling your soul.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now it's time for your top story. Top story number one today, Andrew Zaltzman. We'd like to pick up a little on your post-celeb, post-apocalypse vibe. How are you coping? And is there any sport coming out in this new world?
Well, let me address the first of those questions first, as is generally the way to deal with two questions. I mean, how am I dealing with it? The way I like to look at it, Alice, is how is it dealing with me? And it's dealing with me very badly because I'm alone in a mansion, whereas I am dealing with it really quite well because celebrity, Alice, is a state of mind. It's not a state of ticket sales. It's not a state of merchandise sales, although these are available. It's not a state of the amount of public attention you get, the amount of adoration and abuse that you get when you walk the street. Celebrity is and you know, for people like me, for genuine celebrities, I mean, it's a state of being. It is who you are. It's baked quite literally into your DNA. And what does celebrity mean, Alice? Because celebrity, we mean something is worthy of celebration. Now, are we not all worthy of celebration in ourselves, as I am alone now with no other humans around me? Well, yes, we are all worthy of celebration. But it happens that I am also more worthy of celebration than other people, and more worthy of more celebration by more people around the world than people like you. And that's where the celebrity listing system comes in. And of course, my A-list status was not due for review before, obviously, the apocalypse until 2025. So I'm still legally a celebrity. And more importantly, spiritually, I am a celebrity. Even if I now technically don't have anyone to be a celebrity to, for, with, or above. So, but I'm not giving up, Alice. I'm not giving up on, you know, what I built for all those decades before this all happened. I still hold a daily press conference just to keep in shape. Only because it's just me, I have to ask myself all the questions, which can get quite difficult, to be honest. You know, just the other day I asked myself,
what's your least favourite question that you ask yourself?
Well, just the other day, and I mean, it did lead to a fight breaking out in the press conference, and I had to break myself up from myself. When I asked Andy Zaltzman from the Zaltzman Weekly, when you look back on your life, Andy, and the trail of broken relationships and friendships you have left in your pursuit of fame and fortune, is there anything you regret? And obviously things kicked off.
I mean, yes, that is the kind of question that would kick you off. I know you. I've asked you difficult questions before, yeah. Andrew, and I'm glad that our friendship has survived the ensuing fist fight.
Yes, well, I mean, well, has it? But, I mean, we also have to ask, you know, what is the process of, you know, coming to terms with it? And really, you know, when you are someone of my standing, you have to cling to the values that made you what you were in the before times, in the real times, as I like to. And I cling to those values, you know, things like, you know, what we do in this life echoes in the next 24-hour news cycle, very much an updating of the great Roman philosopher statesman Maximus Decimus Meridius. All people are created equal. I mean, we cling to that. And also the second half of that saying, which is, but from pretty much immediately after being created, some people become much better than everyone else. Deal with it, losers. And also, stay humble, watch it crumble. Because you have to believe you're special, because if you don't believe you or yourself are special, other people won't. But it's like when you're trying to stop an ox from trampling over your garden. If it can sense fear, it's going to shit on your daffodils.
I mean, that is...
What was the second question? The sports.
The second question I asked Andrew Zaltzman was, I know that you are a sports fan and you've been following the new leagues, the new sports, the new inventions of the post-apocalyptic era.
Yes.
What is, you know, what's the sports landscape looking like now? Who's competing with whom? What are the sports that they are playing? Who are you following? Who are you barracking for?
There's been very much an existential crisis in the whole world of sport. Famously, it was said that sport is war minus the shooting. If you flip that equation around, war is sport plus shooting. Shooting is war minus sport, and sport is the square root of war minus shooting, brackets shooting over fighting times pi cubed over y, where y is offside. So it's all a bit confusing for sport. One sport that has done very well, interestingly, is ice hockey, because most of the population of Canada made it to Antarctica. Incredibly, it shows what a resourceful nation the Canadians are, and they are currently playing the world's biggest ice hockey game with tiny goals at either end of the Ross Ice Shelf, some 500 miles apart. And at one point yesterday, there were 3,500 simultaneous fights going on the ice during. I mean, it's a nightmare to referee, but it has kept Canada alive and well as a country. Other than that, we've seen a process of. You know, the democratization of sport in many ways, because a lot of the old sports obviously have died. Football ceased to exist when there wasn't enough money left around. There was therefore no point in carrying on with it. Other sport.
I always thought it was a doomed sport. I figured at some point they'd realize they could use their hands.
Well, I mean, I think that point happened early in the 19th century at rugby school and rugby evolved. Obviously, the one true sport, cricket, exists in a kind of timeless state of perfection. So it's not really affected by apocalypses. It has always existed since the very dawn of time. Many people think the Big Bang was actually God bowling an inswinging Yorker at himself. But the democratization of sport is you have the communities of people gathering around, you know, to try and survive, and, little democratic structures building up. So they're designing their own sport where each person chooses one bit of the new sport that tribe will play. So I mean, if we like, we can try and develop a new sport right now if you want. So I mean
sport by committee, my two favorite things.
Well, exactly. I mean, so choose a ball to use in our new sport, Alice.
Let's go with a human head, plenty of them lying around.
A human head. John Luke, choose an implement to hit the human head with.
A human leg.
So we're using dismembered legs hitting dismembered heads.
Dismembered, yes, dismembered.
Dismembered. Dismembered. So it's not attached still to a human.
No.
Okay.
No.
So I'm going to choose the pitch, which is going to be a forest on a special 50 meter by 50 meter platform with bears in it. Alice, you're going to choose a goal, a form of goal for this new sport.
Sure. Why not a pit with spikes in it?
A pit with spikes. So you have to get the human head into the pit with spikes through the forest, avoiding the bears. How many players on each side, John Luke?
One on one side and 50 on the other.
Okay, so basically, what we're having here is, you know, it's turning dark. But I mean, that's the nature of the world we live in. And who's going to referee this, Alice?
I mean, at this point, I think you're the only person who could track the rules.
Okay, so I will referee 50 people. Against one person, all armed with dismembered human legs, trying to hit a human head into a pit full of spikes in a forest on a ledge populated by vicious bears. And all sports have to have a curious, unknowable law. And that law is that if anyone breathes out whilst hitting the head with a leg without raising their left arm and touching one of the trees, that is an automatic free kick to the other team. So that, I mean, that shows sport is very, it's become very dynamic, and people are adapting to these difficult circumstances that we all live in. But sport is, you know, it is God created humanity to play sport. That's, I mean, I think that's very much the subtext of the Bible, if I remember it rightly. Although I did used to tuck copies of cricket magazines into the Bible when I went to synagogue. But anyway, but the point is, sport will live on, Alice.
They were too busy trying to reconvert you to Judaism to interfere with your reading habits. Now it's time for our top story on royalty, John Luke Roberts, His Royal Highness. You are currently in New Camelot with mm-hmm. King Arthur, trying mm-hmm. to decide which of you will rule what remains of the United Kingdom, or at the very least, England. How's that going? What does that look like?
Well, it's not been easy. You know, we're both very strong-willed kings. He, at the moment, we're arguing about what the title should be. He thinks his title should be King Arthur. My title should be Deputy King Arthur. But it's just, it's tricky to, it's been tricky to pin it down. Obviously, the rest of the royal family all wiped out by that apocalyptic electrical storm, I think, while they were having a photograph. So we also had to deal with John Goodman turning up to say, well, I think I'm meant to be king. I remember that film that I did, and this is what happens. We had to explain that the rules weren't like that anymore. Basically, at the moment, we're cohabiting. We've come up with this system of decision-making whereby whoever can pull the sword out of the stone gets to make the decision. So we have this warehouse full of stones, full of swords, a sword per stone, labelled with different things, like one will be healthcare, one will be labelled with monetary system, you know, one will be labelled with releasing wolves, yes or no. And we both take it in turns to see if we can pull the sword out, and whoever pulls the sword out gets to make the decision on what we should do on that front.
And how's it coming out?
Well, he is better, I think, at pulling swords out of stones. That's definitely, yeah, he's had practice. I still managed to get the odd one or two swords out, although it's about 1 in 10 for me at the moment, 9 in 10 for King Arthur. I do sort of wonder if he's loosened them for me first, just to sort of give me a bit of a self-esteem boost. But at any rate, yeah, we're getting by. We've got the round table again, so it doesn't feel so unequal. Although the round table is sort of, it's cylindrical and about 9 feet long and tilted. So he's at the top of the round table. I'm very much at the bottom of the round table most of the time.
But that sounds like a water slide.
Well, unfortunately, he throws a lot of water on me, but it's more like waterboarding, I think, than you know, fun flume time.
Can I just ask John Luke? Cause you know, it's been a while since I've been in touch with Arthur. Once he's do you not have an unfair advantage? Once he's pulled the first sword out of the first rock, that he can then threaten you with his sword not to pull out further swords from further rocks. I mean, how collaborative is this? It sounds like he holds very much not only all the cards, but literally all the swords.
All the swords. You know, that's true. Although I will say the guns are loose, so you know he can be coming at me with a sword, but I've brought a gun to a, I've brought a heap of guns actually to a sword and stone fight.
Right.
Well, also, unfortunately, you can only ever really wield at maximum 2 swords at a time, and you know, 2 guns. Really.
Oh no, I will say he's got very strong jaws, so he can hold a third there, and he's really been working on his squats. So occasionally he does come at me holding the sword between his buttocks and wiggling that around. But that's more a party trick than anything else. I don't find it particularly threatening.
Is it possible to lift up the rock with the sword in and sort of use it like a big cudgel or not? Would that not be just as easy for everyone?
I did try that.
Right.
I got, unfortunately, the backswing was fine. I got the sword and the stone up, but then I fell over backwards because the stone was ultimately very heavy. So the momentum, I mean, I fell off, I'd say a small cliff, but you know, cliffs only get so small. So that wasn't great. Yeah, We do get on. I'd say, you know, there's obviously this power imbalance, but we generally get on. I've been trying to introduce him to all the culture he missed while he was buried in the earth, which obviously thousands of years of it. We've reached a kind of sticky patch at the moment where we're just reading restoration plays together. He really likes the restoration comedy, so we just sit down and take the different parts. At the moment, we're midway through The Fop, The Feather and The Fart. He's having a whale of a time, but I'm not enjoying it quite so much.
Just in terms of Alfred coming to terms with them at the modern age, he of course lived in an age of chivalry, and you know humanity has not always maintained that level of good behaviour between the male species and the female species. So I mean, how does Alfred see where we are now in the context of Me Too and the rebalancing of gender politics?
Arthur.
Well, of course, the rebalancing of gender politics has been kind of helped by most people being wiped out. So,
true.
You know,
there's not
so many men to deal with so many women and so many women to deal with so many men. I'd say that Arthur is... he's not coped well, because when you're king and all-powerful back in medieval times, chivalry is actually quite easy. You know, there's not much you have to do. There's not much you have to... You don't... You just smile at someone. That sort of chivalrous enough. They're the ones who have to walk out of rooms backwards. King Arthur has never walked out of a room backwards, as far as I can see. He's tried it once just to be sort of, I think he was trying to be nice, but it came over as patronising. And he tripped over one of the stones which was lying around.
Well, that's all the time we have for our second top story for today, because now it's time for your ads again. Your ad section now, because how else would we break up the days? Now being adapted to Netflix, the best-selling work from the online bestseller and self-published romance maven Dancy Lagarde. After generations of being derided, kept out of bestseller lists by bigoted intellectuals who refuse to respect female desire as a legitimate forum for literary expression, historical romance with a supernatural twist is having its day in the mainstream sun. Coming soon to your local streaming service, Storm in a Tea Count is the Victorian romantic thriller that will leave your panties in an inextricable, inexplicable, upsettingly damp knot. Escaping an unwanted arranged marriage disguised as a boy, Annalise is the wealthy daughter of a merchant, sold off to an aristocrat to improve her family's social standing in exchange for her dowry, which will repair the ruined estates of the sinister and rakish Duke of Harberton. But less than 3 miles into her headlong flight from the sinister Duke's estate, she stumbles upon a gentleman in the throes of being held up by a highwayman. Though she knows she should not stop, Annalise hits the highwayman with a sentimental vase that she brought along on her escape before swooning in the powerful arms of the mysterious rescued nobleman. Though she fears exposure as a girl, he accepts her story without question, and she is swiftly and passionately hired as a footman to the very duke she was meant to be escaping. Hadrian is the Duke of Harberton. Thick-thighed, strong-willed, and experimentally bisexual, he has carefully cultivated his reputation as a rake in order to fool the world into underestimating him while he tries to repair his family's ruined fortune through trade with the Indies, the ethics of which we will not closely examine. But it's not until a delicate boy saves his life with an inexplicable vase that Hadrian finds his perfect match. But the boy, Anthony, is not of his social class, so it would be wrong to try to finger him on a horse. Can Hadrian resist this sexy stripling whose long-lashed eyes send sensual semaphore signals to his heart and groin? How will Annalise reassure her family that she is safe from ruin when she is living disguised and unwed in the very halls from which she fled? Will they be discovered mid-moment and forced to wed in a way they both secretly want, but to which they will both strenuously object in the moment, giving the false mutual impression that they don't love each other, even though they do, and leading to much incredibly pointless heartache and misunderstanding? Find out in Storm in a Tea Count, coming soon to Netflix. Will you be watching that, John Luke?
Oh, yeah, I will be avoiding it like the plague.
Andrew Zaltzman, are you being cast in this?
Well, not unless I can write a part for someone who's refusing to emerge from a series of concentric mansions. And no, I will not be taking a part of it. But obviously, I have great respect for Lagarde's work, even though I do find some of it a little bit derivative of Elizabeth Gaskell's prime, largely unpublished works in the mid-19th century.
Of course, there is some controversy about this filmed translation. People are talking about the cross-racial casting in that or many of the black background figures and parent figures are being played by tentacled octopus people from New Zealand, of course, to help fund the production.
Well, But that's just the way of films, isn't it? That, you know, that, you know, for example, in the film Cats, that from the before times didn't do tremendously well. They had to film humans because humans have got the most powerful agents. You know, cats can turn up, obviously be perfect for the role. That's not really what shifts tickets, is it?
Not at all.
Also, when it octopuses, the octopus remake of Jesus Christ Superstar, the logistics of crucifying an octopus was something I hadn't really thought of before.
It's basically a big asterisk.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
A wooden asterisk you had to impale it.
It rolled down the hill at the end.
There's something quite, because of, green screen, CGI, the motion capture thing, if you get the right, like, blue suit on the octopus with all the balls down it, you can actually make an octopus into four different people at the same time because of the number of limbs they have. So actually it's a more efficient way of filming than using humans.
And also octopuses can do a glove puppet production of eight rugby players discussing line-out tactics. No other species can do that.
Breaking news out of Russia now. Apparently Navalny has arisen from the ruins of the military prison that he was imprisoned in and is now a huge benevolent mutant after too many poisoning attempts from Putin. He has risen and challenged Putin to a bare-chested horse race. Any speculation, boys, on how this is going to turn out for Mother Russia?
Well, I mean, you know, why do the horses have to be bare-chested? Why is it always, you know, the horses are expected to show a bit of cleavage in a race between two egomaniacs? I don't see.
I think it's the gentlemen who are going to be bare-chested, and they'll get extra points for how manly they are.
Well, I mean, it was interesting about Putin. The news is that, I mean, he's now vowed to be permanently bare-chested to bring some hope to the people of the remaining people of Russia. And he actually, I've heard, has a range of chests of varying degrees of insulation that he uses for the different seasons of Russia, obviously renowned for its brutal winters. So he has one that you know, has special insulated cavities in it. I mean, it does make him appear to be 5.5 meters wide, but it's still a bare, very manly, a very wide, manly, but warm chest. And he also has armoured bear chests for special occasions as well. But from Navalny's point of view, it's great to have a benevolent mutant, isn't it? I mean, you can't have a feeling that mutants over history would have been more popular if they'd played the benevolent card a little more often. So I think this is quite an exciting development.
I mean, it is a delightful thing in this post-apocalyptic world. So many of the mutants that have emerged have just wanted to smash up buildings and, you know, steal young women and do that kind of thing. So it is really nice to see a benevolent mutant arise, radiating goodwill from his many, 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 many eyes. We can only hope that he will continue in his benevolent attitude towards things. John Luke, do you have any bets?
Sorry, Alice, are you sure it's goodwill that he's radiating from his eyes? Was he? Because I heard he was near one of the nuclear power plants that got sadly destroyed in the apocalypse. Are we sure it's definitely goodwill, or could it just be lethal radiation?
I mean, certainly the extremely reliable sources that I have heard from, which is mainly Russian bots, indicate that it is goodwill.
Reassuring.
Yes. John Luke, any bets to place on this bare-chested horse race and who will emerge victorious? Obviously, you are currently in a race for who's going to be the most king of England. So you might have some inside knowledge on how leadership decisions are made in this new world.
My feeling is I'm just hoping that I can keep the news of this giant mutant benevolent Navalny away from King Arthur because he won't like it. He won't like it. Emerging, a new ruler emerging after a long time underground. He doesn't, you know, he'll say plagiarism. He'll probably try and take it to the courts, which, of course, there aren't many left of nowadays. It's mainly just, you know, there's some set up around fires, but I don't really think I'd trust them to make any really just decisions. But I mean,
he loves courts, doesn't he, the King Arthur? Just surrounding himself with judges and admin at all times.
Yes, but all we've got access to here in New Camelot in Heston Services, just outside the M25, is a series of rats. So we've got rats. We have sort of trained some of the rats, knighted quite a few. So we've got the round cylindrical table. The rats just kind of run around it while we're on it. And he will, you know, he likes to play like it's the old days and go, ha, 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 Sir Featherington, it's good to see you again. I see you thwarted the old crone. And then the rat will run away and he gets the names mixed up. He often names different rats the same things. It's sad to see a once great man reduced to this.
Can you put a chastity belt on a lady rat or not? Well, I don't know what the logistics of that are.
God knows we've tried. Right. We have tried. We can get them on, but unfortunately they don't stay on because we've not yet mongered them to the right scale.
Okay. But, I mean, interestingly, that when you mentioned rats, what I heard is that Putin is going to try to trap the giant mutant Alexei Navalny with a giant Navalny trap that is baited with cheese. So it'd be interesting to see if that you know, that old kind of reusing old technology in the modern world bears vicious fruit.
I mean, we will just have to wait and see what emerges from the Siberian permafrost at the end of this bare-chested race. Whose nipples will break the sound barrier first?
This was the annoying thing about the apocalypse. That whose nipples will break the sound barrier first was a documentary that was three quarters of the way finished when, obviously, essentially, the world as a functioning entity ended. That was one of my best ever programmes.
Well, that's all the time we have for breaking news. Now we're on to our third top story, John Luke Roberts' language. Apparently, you and King Arthur have been working on some post-English languages for the realm. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I will. I mean, we've been going through the historical periods between when he was put in a hill and the door closed. I don't know if you'd call it a door. It's a bit of turf really laid over the top. 1,000 years gone past. He's just found the bit of history about Esperanto. And he discovered that there was this language made to bring hope to people of the world. And he said, well, you know what? I think we should pick this up. We should try and unite the world by building a new language and sending it everywhere. And it will be a good leveler for everyone. But I want to make it feudal so everyone knows I'm in charge. So I want to make a proper Arthurian language. And I said, well, I'm king as well. And he said, yes, but you're also King Arthur, you're Deputy King Arthur. So we share a name. So that's fine. So we sat down. We've been working at it. I mean, as I say, it's quite hard because he wants to spend most of his time just reading out the Restoration comedy plays. So at the moment, we're on Lady Cotterham's Box. And then I know we've got the Squabblers to do. Then Don't Forget the Harpsichord before we move on to What's That in the Baron's Arsehole. And at that point, hopefully, finally, we can really get down to building this language. Because I will say, so far, for all the hours we've spent on it, we have only come up with three words. Would you like to hear them?
Yes, please.
Okay, so the first word is, it's to replace the word inconvenient. And that word we came up with is strubcopple. And that was very much, we worked on that together. He said strub, I said copple. There. And then, unfortunately, we had to take the afternoon off to read A Most Delectable Day. Then the next week, we were able to come back and we came up with a word for semi-detached house, which we decided on doppelplass. And King Arthur came up with the doppelpler and I came up with the ass at the end. Now, you've probably noticed these aren't very useful words. You know, they're reasonably... we could have got by without them. You can point at a semi-detached house. Or you can point at a detached house and say, well, imagine that, but there's another house on it. You know, you don't need new language to do that. So after reading Hats for a Halfpenny, we did finally get round to, and I was very excited about this, say, look, let's get to the nitty gritty. We need a word for be, you know, be, the word be, like to exist, to live, you know, except I am, you are, you, that's the word. So we sat down, took quite a long time. We came up with the word cuddle striper with a sting at the end. And I've just realised that Arthur was talking about be the insect, not the verb. So we're going to have to go back and do something more with that.
Well, it's interesting on this talk of the evolution of language, that play, the famous play. What's that in the... Was it What's That in the Duke's Arsehole or the Baron's Arsehole?
Yes, What's That in the Baron's Arsehole. What's That in the Duke's Arsehole was a bolderization of the original. It's a much weaker piece.
Yes, of course. So I'm getting mixed up. But when that just shows how language evolves, because, of course, arsehole in those days was actually a pit in the ground in which the nobility would hide their least attractive beasts of burden, generally a donkey or an ass. The asshole was the pit in which, you know, the unsightly creatures were kept.
It's only just dawned on me that arsehole has another meaning. God, that would be a funny thing, wouldn't it? The before times, modern. I'd forgotten it. Wow.
Yeah, interesting bit of etymological history there. Actually, the name for the hole in the ground that was full of ugly animals only got applied to the human hole after the horse shooting plague of 1642, where people did poos that looked like very ugly animals. Which is to say, a lot more beautiful than your normal poo, but still disconcerting.
That's what really sparked the English Civil War to take off in earnest in 1642 was the horse shits and the disagreement between Roundheads and Cavaliers over whether or not they were works of art or works of nature.
I have to say, gentlemen, it is always lovely to talk to people who have equally good educations to myself. So it's a real pleasure. We're winding up towards the end of the show. Do either of you have any more news from where you are right now? Andrew Zaltzman, what continent is your Matryoshka house on?
Why should I tell you that, Alice? I mean, I've constructed this hideaway perfectly, and I know some of our viewers have been asking this question as well. I'm enjoying my new privacy whilst maintaining the level of... In fact, I've never been more famous than I am now because I'm the only person in my life and I've heard of myself. So that's 100% of people in my world have heard of me. So, it's really as good as it can. So I don't want that level of fame to be ruptured by people hearing where I live and camping outside just trying to get a photo and an autograph, or maybe some underwear hurled out the window, signed, of course. So I'm going to tell you where I am. This is my realm. Let me live in it.
Well, finally, before we wrap up the show, I would like any of your thoughts on what is going to happen with the Boris Johnson, Piers Morgan, were-dragon baby love child, now that it has destroyed the world in its first week of life. What do you think is next for the champion? How will it... hit those highs? What's it going to go into next? What does retirement look like for a baby? John Luke?
I think, like a woman in Hollywood, it will be rested for a few years and then brought back. So I think for the time being, we don't need to think about it. It's had its big shot. The public will turn quickly if it tries to do too much too quickly. So I think we're probably looking at the love child spending a few years in various spas, maybe writing a book.
I've heard that the love child's special advisor, who of course it sacked a short while ago, could turn on the love child with some horrific stories about what it's done behind the scenes. Obviously, in front of the scenes, it's pretty much destroyed the world. But it just makes you think, what on earth is going on behind the scenes with those genes? You've got to be worried, haven't you?
Yeah, every time a big story comes out, you think, well, they're distracting us from something.
Exactly.
And to distract us with the end of the world.
What is that covering up? I mean, that's that could be huge. That could be the biggest story with all due respect to King Arthur pulling the sword out of the stone the very first time. I think that could be the biggest story in the history of the universe.
Well, that's all the time we have for the show today. Thank you for listening to The Last Post today, or watching it if you're there in the other dimension. We're here in your ears every month of this year. And your guests today were John Luke Roberts and Andrew Zaltzman. John Luke Roberts, have you got anything to plug?
My record is coming out in June called It Is Better. That's a new stand-up hour. And my podcast is coming out hopefully sometime soon, but I don't really know when. It's called The Sound Heap. And it's good.
Andrew Zaltzman, anything to plug?
Well, as I believe Franklin D. Roosevelt himself once said, I have nothing to plug but plugs themselves. I'm producing an album of my greatest plugs for other things that I've had coming out called Zaltz Plugs. And that is due out now with a range of merch as well. The Zaltz Plugs will be available from certain types of shops. Near you, but that should be out. I'm looking to plug it as much as possible at the moment, and in fact that this bit is going on the end of the record. It's going to be out in literally minutes.
I mean, that is magnificent. I've just got another tweet on the hashtag Hagow on Twitter. Another Alice Fraser from the other dimension has got in touch, said in her dimension she makes a show called The Gargle, which is weekly, a spin-off of The Bugle, the glossy magazine to The Bugle's audio newspaper for a visual world. Thank you, Alice Fraser, there, and I appreciate you hooking us up with the glitch in the space-time continuum for this show. The Last Post is an Alice Fraser and The Bugle podcast production. I am Alice Fraser. Find me online at Alliterative on Twitter and Instagram. That's A-L-I-T-E-R-A-T-I-V-E. Or for a one-stop shop of all of my stand-up specials, podcasts and blogs, sign up on patreon.com/AliceFraser for behind-the-scenes pass to my glamorous life. The executive producer of this podcast is Christopher D. Skinner. His sub-producer, the editor and the iron fist inside his velvet glove is the inimitable Ped Hunter. As we always say, good luck to you, Christopher. And I'll talk to you again next month.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, The Last Post, Tiny Revolutions, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
The Last Post with Alice Fraser.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.